All right, on today's episode of Heads in the Cloud, John and I are joined by Michael Sterrell, CEO of Cloud Optics and Carve Digital. We're going to talk about everything marketing, fish, Montana,
turkey, Swiss land sandwiches, and no responsibility whatsoever for any other living organism in his home. Right?
Stay tuned.
Heads in the Cloud with your host, David Portnowitz, Graham Potter, and John Roth.
Episode of Heads in the Cloud. I'm David Portnowitz.
And I'm John Roth.
And we're going to be joined later by Michael Sterrell, who is the CEO of Carve Digital and Cloud Optics. Michael, a good friend of Star to Star, someone we've known for quite a while. Looking to get into a nice conversation with him regarding all sorts of stuff, right,
yeah,
John?
Yeah, absolutely.
Talk about marketing, talk about the industry, talk a little about fish.
It's a nice spot.
And you know what? He's coming to us from a state I've never been to, Montana.
I haven't been to Montana myself. I don't believe.
Is there a national park in Montana? Yellowstone's in Montana?
Jellystone Park with Yogi and Boo. Yeah. Okay.
That it's in western Montana, no?
I'm looking for
that. All right,
we're going to pull that
I'm
up.
I'm a geography wizard.
Yeah.
Don't hate on me on that.
Well, I know I've been there.
I don't even know what I'm not either. So what states border Montana?
I would say it's probably the Dakotas or Idaho or one of those ones. Colorado, maybe. I don't know. We need a map. Well, we have a map right there, actually.
We got a map.
There's a map literally right there.
Do we see it on there?
No. Montana.
Yeah, it's above.
The northern edge of Yellowstone.
It's up in the upper.
It's right below Montana.
Okay. All right. Well, we should go.
We'll go see Yogi.
I would love to go to Montana.
Is it? It's Jellystone, right? We're talking about the Jellystone National Park. Okay.
Anyways, we just got back from a nice trip. We're visiting our top 15 partners.
Yes,
and
Key West.
Our top sales team down in the Keys.
Yeah, it was
we
nice.
We got back from our partner council trip, our sort of our president's club. And had a great time, did you?
It's in a lot of six-toed cats and a lot of roosters.
Yeah, there were a lot of chickens walking around.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Not to Key mention West. The roosters.
Yeah. I took a rooster home with me.
What is that? What do you mean by that?
I took a rooster home with me.
That doesn't seem legal.
Well, it was actually a metal rooster for the garden. So
you bought a rooster.
Yeah.
You bought a decorative rooster.
I thought better of it once I was lugging it around and going, and the shipping was actually as much as what the, so I said, I will carry it, and had to carry it around all day and carry it around on all the way back.
But, so that wasn't great.
No, it was okay. My wife liked it.
I look forward to seeing a picture of this rooster in your yard.
Okay. We will put that in the next newsletter, I guess. John's rooster in his yard.
No, but I had a great time. We had some of our top partners there. I think
yeah,
they
it was
really
fun.
Enjoyed it.
It was one of the best ones we've had. It really was fun and enjoyable. Got to go out, and Key West is always an adventure. You can just sit there and people watch all day long.
You know, it's really funny. Duval Street really does remind you of Bourbon Street. You know, it's very Bourbon Street-like.
Yeah.
Especially down on the end, sort of near Mallory Square. It's very, very much. There's so many bachelor and bachelorette parties were there this weekend. I don't know. I mean, it was just like crazy how many different groups there were.
Yeah, we had two weddings. I think we had two weddings at the place we stayed at.
Yeah. And I went parasailing. I never done that before. That was pretty cool.
Yeah. You were having any fear getting up there, David?
You know, so here's the deal. I went once before to Key West, and we went on the same, like, sort of all-day water thing, and I skipped the parasailing because I was nervous about it. This time, no, I wasn't skipping it. It looked like too much fun. So I did it with my wife. We had a blast. It was amazing how quiet and just, like, you're not bouncing around. It's just very peaceful up there. It's really cool. It's like, we were only up there for maybe 5-10 minutes, and I mean, like, I could have stayed up there for like a half hour. It was awesome. They dip you down into the water and they bring you back up.
Oh, that's nice.
It was really, really cool.
So Gina liked that.
Yeah.
Okay.
We both did. It was super cool. Did some snorkeling. Saw, what did we see? We saw barracuda.
A barracuda. How long?
Ooh, maybe about, I don't know.
You're measuring out your hand.
Foot and a half, 2 feet.
Foot and a half?
Yeah, I don't know. That
2 feet? That's about 2 feet long.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then we saw a really, we were, actually we got up from the snorkeling, we got on the boat, we were leaving, we saw really one, like from the boat we could see down into the water. It was a, I mean, this thing was probably 3 or 4 feet long. It was huge.
Yeah, they're a little frightening and aggressive if you get a little close to them, especially with some jewelry hanging off of you. That like, oh, there's a bait fish. Yeah.
And some of the groups saw shark too in the water. I missed the shark.
I heard there was a grouper that grew in size by the time it started to up to, I think it was like, I don't know, 2,000 pounds now. It started out at like.
I think it was a tarpon.
A tarpon?
Yeah. I don't think it was a grouper.
Well, that's kind of hard. They're totally different look. You're thinking?
I think they were tarpon.
Okay.
They were big.
Okay.
Who knows? Maybe it was a
grouper. You see all the tarpon that were in the bay feeding when we went on the sunset cruise?
No, I didn't see that.
There's an area where the tarpon come in there, and that's where when they clean the fish, they're throwing it over. And yeah, they school there. It's quite amazing. Actually, there's tarpon season going on right here in Boca Grande right now. Beautiful. Did you know that?
I didn't know that. I don't know anything about fish, not surprisingly.
You eat fish, though.
Some.
You don't.
I'm not a huge fish guy.
You're not a huge fish guy.
I like stuff that's not very fishy.
Okay.
Like I can have shrimp. Shrimp I can get down with.
Okay.
Scallops I've had.
Okay.
I don't really like salmon. Too fishy.
Too fishy.
Yeah. But well, yeah, we can work on that.
Okay. Well, I mean, David, it's up to you. I mean, once you have some change in your life, I mean, it's always fearful to go through that change of saying, I'm going to start eating fish, but I'll work with you.
When I was a kid, my parents wouldn't make dinner. They'd make fish sticks for me.
Oh.
And I'd eat them because they said it was chicken sticks.
So when you had real chicken, you're like, what the heck is this? Right?
I blame them.
You okay.
For everything.
Everything?
Yeah.
Okay. Well.
I know they're good people. So yeah, it was a great time down in the Keys. I can't complain about anything.
A little therapy, you can get that out, David.
No, I'm just joking.
Your parents are wonderful people.
Yes, they're fantastic. So I really, really enjoyed this trip down. It was really nice to see some of our partners. A lot of interest in the Citrix sort of relationship, the Stardash relationship that we announced a couple weeks ago. Partners are really excited about that. Heard a lot about that. So
we had a really, you know, it was good just having kind of like a big family.
Yeah.
Our partners that have been on a partner council for years, and then some new ones that came in, and they basically just had a great time, had some fun, did a little business. But other than that, we just kind of bonded and get stronger and going in 2019. Yeah.
Yeah. So on that note, should we call up Michael?
Let's go.
Let's get him.
Go, Michael. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go.
Call him, Les. Les.
Huh?
Wake up.
Les is asleep again.
All right. We're now joined by Michael Sterrell, who is the CEO of Carve Digital and Cloud Optic. Michael, thank you so much for joining John and I on the podcast today.
Yeah, good morning. It's good to be here.
And you're coming to us live from a chilly Bozeman, Montana. Meanwhile, it's like 90 degrees here in Sarasota.
94.
Started summer. We skipped spring. So how is Bozeman?
Well, like I tell all the locals, there's no such thing as cold weather. It's inappropriate clothing. But Bozeman's good.
I think you're our first guest ever from that's like coming to us from Montana.
I believe so. Yeah.
Have you ever been?
I think I'm one of 50,000, I think, in Montana.
John, have you ever been to Montana?
I don't believe I have.
I've never been there either. I'd like to go.
Maybe we should visit the 50 people that live there?
No, I've heard it's beautiful. So, Michael, I ran into you out in Las Vegas at Channel Partners. How was that show for you? I thought it was one of the best Channel Partners shows they've had in quite a while.
Yeah, I would echo that. It was surprising on the energy. I think we went from a deflated telecom structure over the past years to now everyone's there's this excitement about the opportunity that's ahead of us. And you could see it in a lot of partners' faces. And I walked away from that. And, you know, obviously you said the same thing, but talking to quite a few suppliers and partners, and everybody had the same feedback. Just one of the better shows that we've been to in years.
And a lot of new folks joining the floor there. You know, it's like some, you know, you hear there's not a lot of startup growth in the UCaaS industry, but there's a lot of players that maybe weren't in the UC space getting into it. People like Zoom or Office Depot or places like that are getting into this space. I mean, what's your take on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. So before the show, it was more of this convergence of MSP, IT VAR, and telecom, traditional telecom agent.
Mm-hmm.
Walking away from the show, I saw this convergence on the supplier side, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
You know, you companies with CRM, you had big data companies there, you had cloud or app management, and all of them to me are just parts of different layers within the tech stack.
Yeah.
So it's exciting to finally see them showing up and looking at the opportunity that's ahead of us.
Oracle, another one that was there that I don't think I've ever seen there. Tell us a little bit about Carve Digital and Cloud Optic. What do you guys do?
Yeah, so Carve Digital was kind of the takeaway of we've been working in the service provider environment for so many years, and we saw a disconnect on how service providers could enable what we now call the technology broker. So anytime I say that, we're thinking of the IT VAR, the MSP, and the telecom agent kind of converging. So what we did is we looked at it and said, how do we go help service providers enable the technology broker, better understand the technology so we can become specialists, but also assist them in the next layer, and that's going to market to the end customer. So traditionally, you saw supplier go to end customer, supplier go to broker, and we haven't done a good job in the industry, in my opinion, of broker to end user. Based on tech, based on the enablement tools that are out there. And so we looked at it from how do we create sales enablement, whether it's collateral, webinars, marketing effort, and kind of putting that into a package and working with the service provider and the technology broker directly.
So do a lot of your customers, or I'm guessing your customers for Carve, are on the supplier side, and they're trying to create content to reach out to their MSPs, their agents, their VARs, their interconnects. Is that sort of what you guys do?
Yeah, so that's how it really started. And truthfully, over the past 2 years, what we've seen, especially with the switch in the ecosystem in general, our partners are now looking at and saying, hey, we've never done marketing. And we can define that in many ways. But just a generic approach to it was, we need help. We need a website. We need email campaigns. We need to promote stuff via social. And so what we found is we started seeing a switch, and not a bad switch. Like, it was more partners trying to say, hey, we need help. Can you help us? And so we started limiting the service providers we took on. One, trying to minimize overlap based on the tech stack. But also, we saw a big opportunity to drive awareness for the partners, not only on prospecting, but this whole idea of how do we acquire a customer? How do we nurture? And then how do we grow our customers, right? So it's been a pretty good shift in what we, to your point, started off with. How do we help SPs right out there? Now we can help brokers all day long.
So it's an interesting shift, because you would think that as an SP, star to star, you would go to someone like yourself, Carve, and say, hey, look, I've got, you know, X amount of partners, I need help with the marketing efforts. But you're now saying that the partners are coming to you and saying, look, I don't know, we don't know what we're doing. We need help. You know, what kind of services can you offer? And we may be vendor agnostic, or we may be getting money from a certain, you know, SP that's providing it, an MDF or co-op. Can you help us sort of like build out a campaign or build out a multi-touch or whatever the case is? That's interesting. That's interesting. I guess it's good for your business.
Yeah, no, it's good. And take the other approach to that, especially in the partner community, right? You have, so Star to Star says, hey, we have marketing tools based on our product.
Right.
If I'm a master agent, I'm IntelliSys. I have my IntelliSys, which has generic technology collateral, but mm-hmm. not specific to supplier. And if I'm a Vaughn, I have a battle app that I can give my partners. And we can dive deeper into those things. But when I look at it from a Star to Star aspect, it's, do you want to focus on that core technology push, or do you want to be able to focus on marketing? My guess and what we look at is, hey, let's give overflow to Carve on marketing services for our partners, and maybe there's a way to leverage MDF, et cetera.
That's awesome. I mean, that's, you know, that's one of those things that you're never going to run out of clients, because it's one of those situations where everybody needs a little bit of help, including the SPs for sure, the partners, the masters, everybody needs assistance. So you can never have too much content. And speaking of the content side, what are some of the trends you're seeing for what kinds of content are resonating with customers today, as opposed to, you know, 12, 24 months ago.
I mean, the biggest component is a website, right? Yeah. So many haven't used, many technology brokers haven't used their own personal domain, right? It's been Yahoo or AOL or Gmail accounts, that type of design or setup. And what we're seeing is at least a lot of the company names are turning into domains. We're turning into websites that site doesn't, you're not Apple, right? So you don't have to go spend a ton of money on your website, but the story on the website should match the story in the street. And so the shift is either I had no website or I had a website, but it talked about PRIs and digital T1s, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Now we're updating that content to just be more relevant and be able to, again, mirror the story that you're telling your partners, I'm sorry, your customers. You're telling them about new technology. And if I'm going to your website and it doesn't even work on my mobile phone, I'm questioning what's going on there.
We see it all the time. You know, John, you can speak to it. You bring your team is recruiting new partners and they come on board and they have little to no web presence. And the presence they have was built in 2004.
Yeah.
And, you know, then they have no idea how to edit the page they already had up. And, you know, it just becomes sort of, let's just scrap it and restart it. I mean, John, you could speak to that all
time. Yeah, I was just going to ask you, Michael, if you can give an example of, no names, but example of a company that where you took them from the point where they were using a 2004 website and where you brought them to today. You got any examples of that, of like some...
Yeah, and without, to your point, without any names, you know, what we've done recently for a partner is we turned it into more of a awareness campaign or approach to how they do business. So what they used to do is they had a list of customers, they had a basic website that really didn't talk about the world they were living. So the first thing we did, and I relate this to the gym analogy, is we got them a gym membership. So we got them the website, we kind of outlined a plan. And from there, what we started to do was send out a monthly cadence of just a touch point. We started with a newsletter highlighting technology that they were ultimately selling behind the scenes. I think we were 2 months in, maybe 3 months. The partner turns around and says, "Hey, I have all these people reading my newsletter. What do I do?"
And good problem.
That's a great problem to have, isn't it? Yeah.
And the idea that was like it, with a little bit of a chuckle in my response is, so you now need to pick up the phone and call them, or now you need to email them a personal touch and say, "Hey, you're interested in UCaaS, you're interested in CCaaS or SD-WAN. Let's dive deeper or let's talk more about it." That was one side. The other side, which to me was like, I literally almost fell out of my chair, was my customer called me and was about to buy an SD-WAN solution and came to me before they actually purchased it through someone else because they didn't know that I actually sold that.
Wow.
That's
powerful. And I was, it's powerful, right? Because I'm like, the way I think about it is that's the basic step of you have to let everyone know what you're doing. So be the rock star. Use marketing generically to at least tell people what you're doing, knowing you're not going to hit the silver bullet every single time.
So you're dealing with customers that could be, you know, basically selling to end users. So you're not dealing with just high-end suppliers. You're dealing with real customers or partners out there that are selling on the street, and you're helping them basically re-energize themselves and reborn.
100%. And doing it with some basic crawl, walk, run approach that you can't do everything at once. And again, I emphasize the gym membership because it's the easiest analogy of get the membership, get to the gym, do the workouts, and then over time figure out like what's that custom plan that I have to be on. But you can't get to the custom plan if you haven't even stepped in the gym and done an exercise one or two.
That's what we need to do, John. I should get back to the gym, honestly.
I drive by one every day. Every day I go by the gym. I got to tell you.
Makes me tired. Yeah. I thought you said gin, not gym.
So how do you help a company, how do you help a partner or an SP sort of translate some of the technology? So how do you help translate what SD-WAN means into real customer, you know, you tell them, oh, you need an SD-WAN. They don't know what the hell you're talking about. So, you know, what are some of the things you can say or do if you're a partner to help translate some of the technology speak into real world, you know, sort of case studies or issues or fixing a problem? I mean, what is it that you can say, or what is it that you can do to help sort of translate this for the partner?
So the first thing I generally do is I actually go to the supplier and I say, you've sold customers UCaaS or SD-WAN. Let's stick to that. You've sold customers SD-WAN. Okay, what does that customer profile look like? What size of customer are they? What industry? What cloud applications did they have? Where do you demonstrate a win that you can show that provide the data for?
Yeah.
And the reason I start there is because the truth is we can't answer every question for the customer, to your point, with multiple SD-WAN solutions. So if we have an idea of where we're winning deals, the reality is we know from a sales, from a marketing standpoint, that we can support it. We know that that provider, whoever we choose, can provision it and operationally support it as well. So we kind of have a process that they know what's going on. And I literally, what I do is I say, okay, let's go target or find those customers. And those customers happen to be their prospects,
yeah,
because they don't know them, or customers with their existing base. So I take it to the level of like, let's use data to drive decisions. And ultimately, you, broker, partner, you don't have all the data in your CRM because you've sold them one or two things at the end of the day. So let's use the technology, let's use the information from the supplier, and then we can custom and drive that into whoever that target is.
Are partners coming to, is SD-WAN popular? I mean, I know it's popular, but are you getting a lot of partners coming and SPs like looking for content around that space?
So we're getting the content request for SD-WAN, but the earlier statement one of us made was, what the hell are you doing with it, right?
Yeah.
So to me, it's the overall structure that I look at is I kind of put everything into buckets, about 12 buckets based on the tech stack.
Yeah.
And we start to look at that and say, what does that look like? Here's internet. We know everything drives with internet, UCaaS, mobility, et cetera. So before I say, hey, you want SD-WAN? Okay, what have you sold your customers?
Mm-hmm.
Why would I buy SD-WAN? If I'm selling you SD-WAN and you've only sold them Comcast internet, what does that value really bring to them? And so I push back quite a bit on, I can provide you SD-WAN content, or mm-hmm. we can find a partner for it. Totally fine. But what's the plan around this? What's the strategy that you're thinking about? And I try to just remove it a layer back and then work our way forward from there.
Yeah, it's good to sort of understand the impetus. Like what is causing you to ask for this? Like what are you trying to get out of it, or what is causing your reaction to move in this direction? Because you're not just doing it because of, you know, you picked it out of the wind. You know, there's something has triggered this action in your mind that you need this content, or you need this piece of collateral to help with something. So you're trying to understand what that reason is first, which makes great sense.
And for you guys to add one note there, like I think about Star to Star, you've done a flavor of SD-WAN. Again, many yeah. flavors. So there's many arguments probably flying around on that one. But the idea is
that's over my head, Michael. That's not for me to decide.
But you've done this, right? So it goes back to even the conversation Star to Star would have with a partner, or a partner in general, is we need SD-WAN, but it's that layer of, you know, I need to work out, but what do I really need to work out? Am I doing bicep? Am I doing triceps? Is it cardio? So to me, the same thing applies to the technology SD-WAN specifically. We've been doing a flavor it, but what is it you're really asking for, or what's your customer asking for? To your question of what are people asking for on the partner side, they want a basic go-to-market on what does SD-WAN mean?
Yeah.
What are some questions that I can ask my customer that I ultimately can bring back to you and say, here's my answers. Okay, what's the next step?
Yeah. Yeah, if you can sort of uncover the challenges the customer's having around network or security or, you know, call quality or whatever the case is, then you might be able to lead them into a direction of purchasing an SD-WAN. I think you have to do a little bit of an inception there. You have to sort of get them to realize it on their own.
Well, I think the analogy of basically going in, you got to walk into the gym to get a membership before you say, this is where I want to be. I think a lot of partners come to us and they have some very old content, very old websites. And we, We basically have a marketing department that'll help them build some, you know, some microsites. We'll provide them with some content. But really, it needs to go down a little deeper sometimes and actually have a company like yourself dive in and help those partners out. And I think I'll ask the question, David, from our perspective, our partners can use co-op to help
sure.
fund some of this. I mean,
they want to go out and hire Carve and use their co-op. Yeah. We'll happily support that. Michael and I have had some conversations.
Yeah.
We probably need to have some fresh ones. We had some conversations in the past, so we need to pick that up and certainly have those talks because
I mean,
Michael,
we could have. I mean,
Carve does fantastic work. I've seen some of the work with some of the partners, and they do great. They do great stuff.
I mean, I think if we could show some of those to our partners, like you know, here's what it would look like because you already have someone already built that you could say, take a look at this, and that is if you can show them like this is what it would look like. This is where the UCAS. Here's the content. I think that would help our partners. We have a lot of partners that have been. You know, traditional interconnects, and they haven't, you know, they're trying to stay in business, stay in the marketplace, stay relevant, and they probably, you know, don't even have anything SD-WAN over there on their website. They really don't.
Yeah.
They've got, you know, we sell T1s. I mean, that's
kind
of, yeah, good luck. It's just not going to work, and we try to get them beyond that. So we have a lot of partners, and we actually onboard and bring those partners on. We talk about our marketing department, things we can do to help. But really, it's kind of, you get to the point, it could be just a major overhaul.
Yeah.
And that's where a company like you come in and basically help us, you know, we got to drop the engine out of this thing and put a new one in. So here we go.
Yeah. No, John, you're right on. And the biggest thing there, though, is like for partners that are listening, like, don't be scared. You can't do it all at once. And
yeah.
if you go in understanding that, then, you know, for me, it's a much easier conversation. It's a good process to put in place. But you got to start somewhere, and that's the biggest, you know, position that I put out there is you have to start, and then over time we can get better. And it's just exciting to see like partners opening up and waking up and saying, "Okay, it's time. I got to do something."
Yep.
So you also sit on the board of directors for Telecom for Change. Can you tell us a little bit about that organization? I know. We sponsored a couple of their events every year around Channel Partners, and they're a fantastic group of people. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, definitely. So Telecom for Change is really it's a 501c3 that we've kind of recognized as the community overall has made. We make a lot of money in the community, whether you're a carrier or a partner. And a lot of times, we didn't have a good way to kind of dedicate time or resources, you know, money or time in that scenario. And so what we looked at is how do we provide grassroots charities across the U.S. Some sort of resource. Sometimes it's time. A lot of times it's money. And we've been working on local charities that have either been mentioned or brought to us from partners in the community or some that we've looked at. And we've been doing that since 2014. So it's been a pretty cool, for me and you know, coming onto the board and kind of seeing this other view of telecom, it's been really neat to see the community come together, and really give back,
mm-hmm.
In different ways. And it's something to, you know, we get busy, we, tend to lose, you know, focus on time and what's going on around us. And it's a good way to kind of just come back together and we do it, you know, at least in the Channel Partners Vegas show, we do a big golf event. You can go check that out, telecomforchange.org. You can kind of see the historical pictures, but it's really just a solid way to get the community to stop thinking about technology and just start thinking about how do we give back in whatever fashion.
Yeah, that's awesome. I know Colin Johnson, who was on the Starter Star team here, has been part of Telecom for Change for quite a few years. And I know with our relationship with Intellisys, they're very big into that as well. So, yeah, it's a great, great organization. And like you said, if you want to give back, if you want to donate some time, some resources, some money, whatever you have, you can do it at telecomforchange.org and find out a little bit more about what they do and how they do it. And they're a fantastic organization. So glad to see that you're on the board there. We got to get out and play some more golf. That's what I need to do.
Yeah,
I'll play.
Yeah, I'm better at donating money than I am golf. So
yeah.
Well, if you're betting on golf, you could donate money and play golf at the same time.
Exactly.
So anything else, Michael, that's up that you want to chat about?
No, I mean, the only other thing that I would mention, something to think about, and it's more of my cloud optics side, and is, you know, this whole idea of, we talked about in the beginning, data-driven decision-making, and stay kind of close to that. That's the cloud optics, cloudoptik.com.
Yeah.
And I say that for the partner community, because what we're really working on is how to leverage data to build prospect lists, how to increase or enrich information we already have on customers. But you're going to start to see us come out with tools that I feel will help us enable the partners to go sell more. Cisco Call Manager migration tools, Avaya PBX migration tools, app inventory tools. So I'm really close to that. I'm really focused on that from a what's the next gen on how do we truly build sales enablement tools for the partners?
Very cool. Yeah.
And in return, ultimately, you know, Star2Star or whatever supplier, you end up selling more. And so that's a big passion and a big push that you'll continue to see me promote.
Okay.
And ultimately start working closer with suppliers to drive that into the community. And hopefully we sell more and we go from there.
We can play some more golf and do some more skiing out in Montana. So, Mike, before we leave, we always like to ask a couple of questions. One, do you have any pets? I don't see any dogs or cats running around your house there.
I can barely keep myself alive, let alone an animal.
Do you have any plants?
That's the same answer. There's no plants.
Okay.
The only plants I see are outside when I'm out in the wilderness.
Okay. Okay.
Are you a big wilderness guy?
I am a fly fish, ski whenever I can, mountain bike as much as I can. Those are kind of my three sports I cycle through. Really, you know, in between business in general, that's a pretty busy schedule.
Fly fishing. I've never done fly fishing. Have you done that, John?
Actually, it's a Tenkara rod that I use. Are you familiar with that?
I am. Okay. I am.
So I know you're a big fisherman, John.
Yeah. Well, I'm not. Yeah. Well, I'm big to begin with, but yeah, I like to fish. But I actually catch with a Tenkara rod. It's a kind of a fly rod without a reel. It's kind of unique. But
old Japanese model, I believe, is how that started. Not that I've graduated, because that's not even a fair term. I go into full fly fishing, where if you have ADD or you like complete chaos, it's the way to go, because if you're not. I always explain it. Everyone's like, isn't it boring? Like, how do you do it? And I'm like, well, you're either in a fish catching it, you're either snagged in a tree, snagged in yourself, your line's broken. So it's a lot of work.
It's a ton of work.
Yeah. It always looks so peaceful. People always
With the Tenkara, it's like just you don't have that. You're just kind of flipping it and pull it back, and it's nice and easy. Because I tried to fly fish for years, and I did, but it's a lot of work. I mean, you got to do the coil thing, and it just gets a coil in a basket, and
Yeah, Dave, if you ever saw a full time lapse of fly fishing, it's total chaos. Not the one photo pulled out of that.
I need to try it. I got to try it.
Okay. Well,
all right, John, do you have a question for Michael?
Yes, Michael. The second question is, what is your favorite type of sandwich?
Whoa. Favorite type of sandwich? I'm pretty basic, mostly because I go to a local deli and it's a grab and go. But anything turkey, turkey cheese, turkey Swiss, maybe a panini like I was a little kid. I eat like I'm seven. So as long as it's quick and easy and I don't have to deal with it, I'm good on pretty much any
turkey,
sandwich.
A turkey Swiss.
Maybe grilled.
Lettuce tomato.
Lettuce tomato. Any mayo or anything?
Ooh, mayo, gross.
Well, David's
light on, maybe light on the mustard. But
what kind of mustard? Is it the yellow mustard or is it stone ground mustard?
Cleveland Stadium mustard.
Okay. Cleveland Stadium mustard. Okay.
Are you from Ohio originally?
Originally from Cleveland, yes.
Oh, okay.
Now it's all coming together.
Now this makes sense why he's in Montana.
Exactly.
This all weaves together now. The tail is coming together.
I thought the skiing made sense because I was from Cleveland. That's right.
That's actually where they have the what's the movie that's played in Christmas time? That's actually
Christmas story.
The Christmas story. That's where that home is located, actually, in Cleveland, not in Chicago, where they talk about it in the movie. Yeah.
No, I mean, you have Cleveland for Christmas Story, Chicago for Home Alone.
Yeah.
I mean, two of the best Christmas stories, right?
Yeah.
Or Christmas movies.
When I was a kid, I loved Christmas Story. I'd watch that. I'd watch it all over and over and over again. I love that movie.
Hey, does Cleveland have a baseball team?
Yeah, Indians.
Oh, okay. Jeez.
Terry Francona is the manager, I think.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a guess. All right, Michael. we've really loved having you on today. Thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it. And we'll be in touch. Hopefully, we can work together with get some of our partners using your services. So,
Thanks very much.
And we'll see you at the next event. I'm sure we'll catch up with you later this year.
Yeah, and if not, we'll figure out how to go fish or do something.
Yeah, come here. Well, you have a 10 car rod, Michael?
I do.
Well, you bring it because I'll show you some places we can go catch some quick bass, nice and quick. All right. Yeah.
All right, Michael. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Michael.
Bye. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Later.
Well, that was a really good interview with Michael.
It was.
Disappointing there at the end. No pets, turkey, and Swiss.
Yeah, kind of bland on the food. It's like, you know, just I go by and, yeah, a little turkey, a little Swiss. We didn't know if it was roasted turkey.
Sausalito.
And a little bit of Cleveland.
Yeah. Cleveland. We got to get him down here to Sarasota, take him to some places that have some better
turkey. Take him out fishing. He can bring his Tinkara rod.
I don't know anything about this. Fishing rod you speak of.
It's a Japanese style fly rod without a reel. It's
you know, we have a lot of listeners.
It's quite a cult.
We have a lot of listeners in Japan. Perhaps some of the Tinkara company will be listening.
And Nepal. We have a few
rods.
We have thousands listening to us from Nepal.
Just as they climb the Himalaya mountains.
Well, nothing better to do. They got a pretty good signal right there.
On their way to death. The last thing I
want to
hear is heads in the cloud.
Wow.
Well, I mean, a lot of people die on.
Yeah,
on
but
the,
yeah.
I mean, not. I mean, not
how
everybody.
Many, how many people do you think die a year there? Is there a statistic less? How many people die climbing
Mount Everest? Is it Mount Everest
in Nepal?
No. Yeah. You're looking at me like I'm wrong. That's correct. The Himalaya Mountains.
Mount Everest is in Nepal.
Les, am I completely wrong here?
No, it isn't.
Thank you.
It is.
Thank you.
Well, it seems like such a... Okay.
Yeah.
We're not very good with geography, neither one of us.
I was right there, though. I had that. You made me second-guess myself. I was like, no, Mount Everest, Nepal, Himalayas.
How many people die there, Les, a year?
Well, I found a list of people that died there.
Should we read that as an in memoriam after the show's over?
2015, there were 22. 2015.
Okay, so maybe...
2016.
Okay, so not as many as I thought.
Well, you probably have more people dying of just getting hit by cars
instead
of climbing the mountain.
For sure.
Yeah, okay.
Then more people get hit by cars on Talavast than but, you know, no pets.
No pets. No plants. No plants. No plants. No.
You know what we should do? Maybe on the FDA, you know, I send him a little something afterwards.
Yeah, why don't you send him a little puppy? Do they have? I bet you they have those on with our friend at Thanks. They probably have a little puppy.
Send just a full on animal.
He'd probably go,
here,
oh no, you didn't really send me an animal. I don't want a responsibility. And I don't think you send him a plant. I think it's going to die anyway. Send him a cactus.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Send him a cactus.
All right, I like that idea. I'll see if I find that on Thanks.
Yeah, we'll do that.
All right. I think that's it for today.
Yeah, what great show, David, as usual.
Well, one of our better ones for sure.
Yeah, and that's our first guest from Montana.
Yeah, our first Montanan.
Montanian?
Montanan.
Somebody will come back and correct us, I'm sure. All the three people from Montana that are listening here, if you'll let us know what the term is, how to pronounce that.
All right, that's it for today.
David.
We've dug ourselves into a hole.
Good show. let's dig out. Let's go.
All right.
Let's go. Let's go.
I'm David Portnowitz.
I'm John Roth.
We'll see you next time. Well, we won't see you. Goodbye.